of the crop.
Welcome to the 174th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are back after our summer break to reflect on the season ahead of us. We are recording this on the Tuesday evening after Arsenal's opening Premier League outing of the season, the 1-0 victory over Newcastle. Before we begin, some very brief panel introductions. To start with, the founder and original editor of the Gooner, these days taking very much a back seat except the occasional well-played contribution, it's a very good evening to Mr. Mike Francis.
I'm shamed there, aren't I? Good evening, everyone.
And next up, another regular panellist and hopefully the man with a bit of an inside track on our new foreign signings. We'll find out soon enough. It's a hello to Mr. David Udo.
Evening all.
And last but not least, making what is on average his once a season appearance on the podcast panel, although we might try and squeeze an extra one out of him before May, known as Angry of N5 on Twitter and Angry of Islington on his blog. It's good to welcome back Mr. Phil Wall.
Good evening.
So, gentlemen, we've had our opening Premier League game, 3 points in the bag. What are your impressions based on 90 minutes of beating Newcastle?
Am I correct in saying for the first time since Emery took over as boss at the start of last season, we defended quite well. The silence is not a no.
It was Newcastle, wasn't it? I mean, they weren't exactly hammering at the door. But yeah, I mean, it was a fairly robust defensive performance, especially in the second half. I mean, we never let them get into it in the second half, which was encouraging. I don't know. I guess everyone goes into the first game of the season with optimism and excitement, and I just felt after the first 20 minutes or so, I kind of felt okay. Maybe I was a bit over optimistic. We seemed to be giving the ball away every time we got over the halfway line, especially Mkhitaryan. But it kind of became better after that.
I think we basically just managed to keep a level just above Newcastle, which is not a great indicator of the season. First game, I mean, obviously last season we lost the first two games, so already we're 3 points ahead of where we were last season. A lot of people like to do that kind of comparison, don't they? So,
other people do the comparison that we beat Newcastle away last season. Actually, did we? We lost.
2-1. We did win. It was near the beginning of the 22.
In fact, I believe we've beaten Newcastle now in 13 out of the last 14 times we played them. Mm-hmm. So, from that point of view, it was an expected win.
I think the other one, we were 4-0 up after 20 minutes.
I'm not sure if it was that one or not, if that was longer ago. But it was an expected win, and I would have been disappointed not to win. And I think there were a few good performances around the field, but nothing exceptional. But early days. The thing I don't really understand is when a team buys somebody for 70-odd million, why do they not stick him on the field from the kick-off?
Well, presumably he wasn't match fit.
It's an unfortunate thing about end of season now. I mean, gone are the days before Premier League and money football started, whereby you'd finish in the middle of May after the FA Cup final and there'd be absolutely nothing. The every other year, obviously, the European Championships or the World Cup, but in an odd number year like this, you know, nothing at all. They come back for first pre-season training day, 4th of July, and everything's done by that point. And when the season starts, it's a brand new team, whereas now you've got the Copa America, African Nations Cup, the Under-23, Under-21 Championship. So where 4th of July wasn't the start of pre-season for everyone, Christ, we hadn't signed half the new players at that point. So pre-season really only starts, I would have thought, 1st of September, when all of the outgoing players have gone and the players get to know each other.
So Pepe was at the African Cup of Nations.
He was.
Ivory Coast. And did that finish towards the end of June?
I think it was into July.
So he would have had three and a half weeks off after that. Okay. So basically he won't have had a brief season. And will he start against Burnley?
Yeah. I think he probably will. I think home game, I think people almost will expect it. Who would he come in place of? Mkhitaryan or Nelson? I don't know whether he plays right side when he came on. Mm. And that tends to be
Mkhitaryan has switched over.
Mkhitaryan could switch over.
You don't think he's higher up the pecking order than either of those?
You would think so. Mm. 72 million. But
A good game to start him, though. No question.
Because if you can afford to start with Nelson away from home in the freezing cold and the rain in Newcastle, you think on a sunny Saturday afternoon at home, I mean, it'd be more comfortable for Nelson, would have thought.
For Nelson?
Yeah, for Nelson. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry. Getting names confused already, not good start.
Yeah, all right. Well, anyway, it's Spurs and Liverpool follow. So he's going to have to get used to the Premier League at some point. We'll see what happens. I mean, the one thing that struck me in the build-up to Sunday's game was contrasting how Arsenal fans felt at the conclusion of last season, contrasted with a surprising feel-good factor going into the first game. I mean, it just seems such a turnaround, based presumably on the fact we signed a few players.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be the case, isn't it? It doesn't really matter who you sign off, then it's.
But people just didn't expect that.
I would think even if we'd signed no one, the mood would still have improved from screwing up the top four chase at the end of the season and some appalling results, and then losing the Europa League final. But that's, you know, 2-3 months ago now, and people are still going to be more optimistic. Even if nobody had come in at all, people would still be more optimistic than they were 3 months ago because it was 3 months ago.
Mm. Well, but if we hadn't signed anybody...
Well, if we hadn't signed anybody, there would be a little bit of antagonism, I'm sure.
What's going to be any different, you know?
Well, the one thing the last two summers have taught us is the club really, really was run by Wenger for 20 years. I mean, during his times, we'd leave it up until transfer deadline day, Jim White going crazy, we would sign another unknown from the French second division. Whereas now... even though Edu had not much to do with it, as a technical director, also Nyehi and his background and the amount of people that he knows in football, and towards the end of last season, Emery coming out saying, I need new players for this team. But it did happen. And whilst everyone was fretting, about 2 weeks before the start of the season, we've only announced a loan signing from Real Madrid and not much else on top of that. A centre-half we've loaned back to France already. I mean, fair play for Sanyehi to secretly have aces up his sleeve and pull them out at the end of it. If someone offered you at the start of the transfer window, we'd have a new left-back, two new centre-halves, one of which is going to grow up for us this year and turn up next summer, and someone worth £72 million, and the next best thing would have snatched their arms off, no?
Yeah, it was funny. Coming up today, I was bringing some back issues up for Kevin. One of the issues I brought up was... the issue after our panic buying after the 8-2 defeat, where we went Mertesacker and
Park Chu-young
and Arteta, and it kind of just went in my mind going, we kind of bought the same number of players this year, yet it just felt we were organised with it. It felt like there was a plan throughout. Tierney was clearly on the radar right from the beginning of the summer, and okay, they only wrapped it up on deadline day, but I think that was probably making sure we got the right deal rather than any panicking but buying. And even Luis, it kind of felt more planned. I know it was probably a bit of a last-minute decision, but at least we'd said, we've got to get a centre-back.
But do you think...
And maybe at the last minute, he was the one that was available at the right price.
Do you think if there had been no shenanigans with Koscielny, we would have brought in Luis?
No.
No, I don't think so either.
So we'd have had the same defenders plus the returning Callum Chambers. Obviously, Tierney comes in at left-back. But centre-back wise, you would have had six centre-backs to choose from, Chambers being the only new face, if you want.
Yeah.
Exactly the same as it is now, essentially. I mean, look at the back four that played on Sunday, it would have been the same. The only potential change being Koscielny on the bench instead of Luis, and essentially they're virtually the same player, although some have argued, personally I agree, Koscielny's knees are gone. You could see that when he came back, bless him, last season. But his knees are gone, and Luis is 2 years younger. He's a sprightly, crazy guy, but to get him for $8 million and to sell Koscielny for $5 million, I mean, I would have taken the hit of like $3-4 million.
I'd take Luis for $8 million, even if we hadn't sold Koscielny.
I think
I think for that price, it's a good price.
Hmm. He's one of those players who he can be very good or look very bad and have the odd very bad game. And obviously, he was in the Brazil team when they got stuffed 7-1 by Germany, wasn't he? So. He knows what it's like to get stuffed by a big team.
as long as it's not the other Brazilian centre-half, Gustavo Cesar.
Oh.
That's a Portuguese gag on Gus Caesar.
Oh, right. I see.
I'll tell you what. That's
clear idea.
You are on the wrong podcast, my friend. I'm just going to get a listener question in here because it's this subject area. Jonathan Houseman tweets, with one of our best summers for many years in both ins and outs, was the key for the future actually getting rid of Ivan Gazidis? I don't think we did actually get rid of him, but anyway, that's
what he's gone.
All right, seeing the back of Ivan Gazidis and replacing him with someone who actually knows what football is about.
I think that's it. I think that's it in a nutshell, isn't it? Mm. You know, and I was never the biggest critic of Gazidis. I always thought
Gazidis bought Sanier in.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, he deserves some credit for some things, but you do look at the transfer business and you just think, Gazidis must have been the blocker. Certainly for the last few years. Your point about Wenger, I agree.
Was Arsene the blocker then?
Well, yeah, and I think he was. But let's face it, Wenger was not in charge of transfers for his last season.
Not for his last season, no.
No, so that means we've had four transfer windows since Gazidis was more in charge and done nothing up until this one.
Although, didn't we sign Gabriel?
Done nothing maybe is harsh, but not addressed the problem areas.
I mean, give Gazidis his due this window, though. I mean, he managed to con AC Milan into spending 10 million on Ishmael Benacca, and we got €4 million as a sell-on fee. So, many thanks to Ivan for that.
Good start.
Still looking after us then, is he?
Trying to.
Pay back some of that money.
Basically, I mean, to answer the question, if I can try, all the work that Gazidis did, in my opinion, all the good work that he did was done in that last year when he brought other people in and Sanley and Mislintat and whoever else, Mislintat obviously gone out the door again, but got a team in there to replace everything that Arsene was doing. Mm. Until that point, he'd obviously never felt in a strong enough position to undermine Arsene.
Presumably because of the owner.
Well, presumably because that's the way it had always been since he turned up. And yeah, but he gradually had to erode Arsene's power base.
Yeah, but the Kroenke could have done that at a stroke, you know.
Oh, he could have done, yeah. Yeah, but the Kroenke, why would he do that? Status quo for Kroenke, isn't it? Money rolls in.
This is the problem with
Kroenke. And there were stories after we beat Chelsea in the cup final. Wenger was at the hotel on Ritzley, or the Ritz, where hotel it was, 9 o'clock on the Sunday morning, begging for a new two-year contract.
He talked him into it. Mm. Yeah. Even though, in theory, several of the board weren't happy with it, but Kroenke was running the club by that time in terms of the major decisions. I will just read this one out because I do read everything that comes in. I think he's messing about. Simon Albert on Twitter, you've already responded to this, Mike. Does the panel believe that the Kroenkes put any of their own money into fund Arsenal? Not 2019 transfers.
You read my response as well, thanks, guys.
We know the answer to that one. So I don't know why you asked that, Simon, but maybe you're pulling our legs. Here's a good one. Let's read this one here. Gary Lawrence. If the rumour is true and Inter Milan are prepared to pay €50 million for Granit Xhaka, do we have the midfield options to cope with without his experience? Should we take the money and rely on what we have?
As he was the one giving the ball away a lot in the first 20 minutes along with Mkhitaryan. Yeah. And he didn't get much better, whereas Mkhitaryan did. You've got to say £50 million would be a hell of a lot of money to turn down for him.
Oh yeah, I agree. I think that kind of money, you're not going to get offered that every year, are you? Just take it where you can get it, because otherwise...
Where is that story coming from? Is it the Italian press?
Well, he gave an interview during the summer, Xhaka, saying that, I'm not going to be at Arsenal forever, I've got ambition. So I don't know if people have put two and two together and hopefully that makes £50 million. But...
Right, okay. Well, I've not heard any of that rumour, but...
I would, you know, saying that, I would be... I think for £50 million, I think I'd sell him. But it would leave us a bit light in that position.
Well, let's look at what... I mean, where does Ceballos play?
He's okay. A Ramsey, apparently. He's a box-to-box midfielder.
Right. So, in terms of, if you look at last... Let's just like look at the Europa League final starting 11. Where would Ceballos... Who would he replace then?
Silence.
Well, all right, I'll give you the options. Xhaka, Torreira, Ozil.
I was going to say, if you're doing it in a 4-2-3-1, for me, it'd be in the number 10 role, in inverted commas. So, as Ramsey used to do.
Right. So this is the thing that is going to intrigue me about the coming games. Because, I mean, okay, they may try and get shot of Ozil. You know, I'm sure they'd like to.
It sounds like a US move might be on the cards, doesn't it? DC United, apparently.
Well, I mean, the other thing, I mean, there's so much to talk about here. The whole gang war thing is, in theory, when will it stop? I mean, because they can't go to Newcastle because of security concerns. Can they go to the Emirates? You know?
But I don't think it was...
You don't think it was genuine?
Well, no, it's not that, but I don't think they weren't travelling because it wouldn't be safe to go to Newcastle. I think they weren't travelling because of the fact that this thing had all escalated, and naturally they're going to be worried about it and not concentrating on football.
Right, OK.
That's my reading of the situation. But it is quite a big... And, I mean, from a purely football point of view, obviously there's concerns for their safety, and I have every sympathy with that. And... But from a purely footballing point of view, this is a reason for Ozil to leave and might be the thing that pushes him out the door.
Mm. Yeah. Knowing that he wasn't going to include Kolasinac in the squad, it's a nice cover story, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it is very convenient because they don't want either of them injured, as if they were going to play anyway. But, you know, if they've got ambitions to move them on... It's handy because they don't have to risk them getting injured. You know, the only way they're going to injure is someone attacking them from one of these gangs.
Potentially serious. But...
Having said that, I mean, for the first 4 years of his contract at the club, I mean, Ozil got that 6-week injury over Christmas every year. Bless him.
Yeah, it wasn't that long, David.
No, it felt like
he had a couple of weeks off. I'll give you that. Ceballos. You know, I mean. We've got him for a year.
He's not a direct Xhaka replacement, is he? Or somebody who's going to fit in place of Xhaka, to go back to that question. But,
right. But
have we got enough depth to cover for Xhaka going?
Well Maitland-Niles, in theory,
can
play that position. Callum Chambers played that position last season for Fulham.
Joe Willock was one of our star players in pre-season. He really knows what he's saying.
But he's more forward than that, isn't he?
I think he's even Luis could play kind of defensive midfield as well. I think we talked ourselves into it. Take the money.
Granny, if you're listening, mate.
Well, he is. Is he? He's not. Is there an official club captain?
Well, there are to be five. Only three of them.
So what happens with the programme notes?
Well, we'll find out on Saturday. I reckon it'd be Xhaka.
Right. I mean, if he does the column every game, he's the club captain, let's face it.
He says does the column. Do you think...
Well, they just get rid of the feature.
And the three of them sort of arguing, you know. You know, Xhaka saying, well, in fact, I'm more Dickens, is the way I put it. You know, Monreal's like, well, I'm more satirical.
I'm going to take you back, all right, to the beginning of the 2007-08 season. Thierry Henry, club captain, had departed. And... the club did announce that we had three club captains. One of them was William Gallas, but in the same photo we had Colo Torre and Gilberto Silva. And then Wenger changed his mind and decided, actually, no, I'm going to have one captain, and it's Gallas.
I can't remember that.
But it's an echo of that. There is a photo of the three of them together pre-season, basically, you know, at the time it was decided. And the club PR put it out, you know. In fact, it might even be on the front of the handbook from that position.
But was it then resolved on Gallas before the season actually started?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, it was a pre-season thing. And maybe someone said to Wenger, we just need one guy here, you know, we can't really work like this.
Yeah, because we've got to have a programme column. Yeah.
That is the important factor.
Yeah. It's all it came down to, yeah.
But anyway, so the five captains, Xhaka, Ozil is one, presumably, from last season.
Yeah.
Monreal, is he one?
Yeah, he was one. They're the three left,
Oh, and the other two have gone?
Yeah, Cech
and Koscielny.
Right, okay, all right. So now we've got three, in theory.
Yes, but Emery said the other day he's having a captaincy group, which will have, I thought five in it.
Five, didn't they? But who's going to be the right off?
I don't know.
Well, is Socrates one?
Oh, have you seen any of the interviews with Socrates, or when he's done those quizzes, him versus Mavropanos on the Arsenal website.
I don't watch this.
Socrates cannot be a captain. It was like. Okay, round one, States of America, and he said Disneyland, not in a jocular manner.
He was as straight-faced as you are, though.
Yeah, but the thing is, when he was giving it, he went, what? What? Not in an incredibly sarcastic, brilliant way. No, he's not a captain.
Maybe he's just a good actor.
Almost choked on my lager there, on which point we're just going to briefly shoehorn in something Mike wants to say about a particular...
So drinking Camden Pale Ale tonight in honour of the what I thought at one point was going to be our best signing of the summer, was signing the deal up there. So Camden Pale Ale, Camden Town Brewery. Thank you. I might actually have a drink in the bar in the ground this year.
Free crates, welcome for that plug. So anyway, back to the plot. Right. Do we remember... Did any of you go to the supporters' Q&A event about 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Did you? No, I did not. No, I normally do, but...
Well, I did, and it was interesting that Raoul Sanier, Vinay Venkatesham, as I think it's pronounced, and Edu, got a bit of a pasting from, shall I say, the feeling in the audience... with cries of when are you going to sign a centre back, etc. It wasn't pretty. Not necessarily saying it was justified either. I mean, these guys are front men for the anger that's directed at the owners. But it seems like Raoul is the new hero now. And
That turned around fairly quickly.
It did turn around very quickly.
Obviously, it was all because of that bad negative feeling out of Menton, I'm sure.
Credit where it's due, though. I mean, when Mislintat resigned of his own accord at home at the turn of the year, we were thinking, well, who's going to buy the players now? I mean, fair play to Sanjehi.
We do have a scouting system of some description. We just don't want to have anyone. Well, we got Francis Cagaggio, in theory, in charge. But my thought is the situation now, Raoul Sanier picks up the phone to someone he knows in France and says, who's useful? You know, who's coming through? Is that our scouting now?
I think it is. I think it's like it's about those agent connections that other clubs have utilised over the years, which we've not since Dean left anyway. And now we've got someone who has those connections and is prepared to use them. I think it is that. I think it's like, you know, what's it going to cost us to get Pepe? 72 million, you say. All right, give me 24 hours, I'll get back to you. You know, rather than, you know, we're not even asking the question or finding out and then walking away from it.
We had the same role at Barcelona for, 15 years. The man's going to know everyone who is anyone, right? Well, you would have thought
so. And I think it's probably being prepared to pay the agent fees that we've not been prepared to do in the past. You know, is that 72 million including the 10 million for the agent or excluding? Because I think there's been some stats kicking around about the agent fees paid, isn't there? And we're well down the table on that in previous years.
Yeah, and no club likes to admit it because it always riles the fans.
Yeah.
And I mean, Man United pay fortunes, don't they? Well, they pay fortunes to everyone.
Well, certainly did while Mourinho was there because they're all his mates.
Yeah.
Well, I mean. Allegedly. Record signing Pepe, even if we're not paying all the money up front. I mean, Sanier did have a guy at Lille who he used to work with, so there was a sort of in there anyway. I mean, what did you think of him when he did come on for about, was it 20, 25 minutes on Sunday?
Yeah, last 20 minutes.
Did you get any inkling that this was a superstar in the make?
No, I mean, I don't think he got the ball very often, to be fair. I think he only touched it probably about four or five times.
Rainy afternoon in Newcastle.
And most of those were in his own half. Not going to get carried away, but... I still remember Glenn Helder's debut and thinking he was bloody brilliant. So, you know...
can't tell a lot.
He was in that debut.
Yeah.
As long as he's not like our previous Ivorian left-winger signed from Lille. As long as he's nothing like Jovinho.
Well, yes.
Well, we'll have to wait until we play Bradford again, won't we?
I mean, presumably... I mean, we got the results, and we did play three academy players for the first time in 21 years, started the game. Do you think these guys are destined for Europa League, or do you think... Emery will actually keep them in the side if they continue performing?
I think it's probably a mixture. I mean, I was pleased to see them in. I think, Maitland-Niles I quite like. I don't think he's a right back. I think Bellerin will come straight back in. But I like Maitland-Niles' attitude. And Willock has played a number of games now, and he's always looked good. He's come out of a number of games. I mean, not against the best opposition, perhaps, but he's tidy. He gives the ball nicely. He doesn't lose it. You know, he tackles back. I don't know whether anyone saw the tackle back where he lost the ball, and Emery's reaction on the touchline to that was quite a sight to see. Great to see. So I was pleased to see Willock get a chance. Nelson, I think, we'll wait and see on that one. I don't know.
I think they'll be more bit part players in the Premier League. Personally, I don't think they'll be solid 30 matches a season people yet, but at the moment I would say they've all got the potential to be, but not this season.
I agree. I think ultimately when it comes to Liverpool a week on Saturday, providing we get a good result against Burnley on this coming Saturday, I think if by that point before the Liverpool game everyone is match fit, I think Willock and Nelson will be bench if they're lucky. But when it comes to Europa League, Carabao, is it still the back Carabao Cup this year? They'll be first choices in it. But in the league, when everyone's fit, bench.
Okay. I mean,
I think they can all play themselves in. I mean, if Willock comes in and puts in an outstanding performance on Saturday, then I think he could start against Liverpool. But otherwise.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, Emery is known, or at least renowned, so I'm told, for allowing people on form to have their chance. Unlike Arsene, who you knew, if one of his favourites was injured, or suspended, or whatever, unavailable, they'd be back. Doesn't matter who had done what in the meantime, his favourites would be back in the team.
Yeah.
Whereas Emery supposedly does it more on merit, and if you're performing well, either in training, if you're performing well in training, you get a chance. If you're performing well playing, you've got a chance of staying in. But then again, we're going to get rotation because of Europa League and whatever else. So there's going to be a mixture. But yeah, I think they're all going to get a chance.
What about Alex Iwobi? An academy prospect. Got a decent offer from Everton. Anyone regret his departure?
I've called my fancy team Obi-Wan Iwobi.
Oh, right.
Annoyed at myself. Anyway.
I was kind of disappointed. I'm one of those, maybe a minority, that sort of always felt Iwobi could be more. And I thought there were times last season I thought he was developing and showing more consistency. Still without being, putting up any...
He's not a kid, is he?
He's not progressed as much.
He's had enough chances. For me, I would say 35 million potentially rising, or 30 million rising, whatever it is, it's like the 50 million for Xhaka. Take it, because you're not going to get a better offer than that.
Yeah, and I agree with that. I think for the price, tinge disappointment that he hasn't gone on to be the player that we'd hoped he would be, having been at Arsenal since he was whatever he was, 7 or 8 or whatever it was. But like you say, 30 million and plus, it's like, I kind of did go back to that game where he played at Everton and scored and had a really good game. And I thought, they remember that, don't they?
Which actually just to see if he becomes a victim of Walcott syndrome and he's gone to Everton and now he disappears slowly over the course of 5 years. I think credit to Emery, in fairness. He persevered with the likes of Iwobi and Mustafi for the duration of last season. Didn't pull them out straight away. Gave him a full 9 months to prove themselves to him, and has decided he's a great player, but he's not good enough for me.
And on that, to be fair, I don't even think it's necessarily just that. I think it's the players that are coming through, like Nelson. How were they ever going to get an opportunity if Iwobi was always your first reserve player for that wide position?
I mean, Wenger wouldn't do that. I mean, do you think Wenger would have taken the 10 million from whoever it was who bought Bielik, Derby this summer from Bielik? Wenger would be like, no, if they're offering 10 million, there must be something in him. I'll give him one more year. Whereas Arsenal were like...
Yeah, but you've got to remember Arsenal...
Probably give him a pay rise, stick him on loan, we're going to week.
Arsenal sent Bielik on loan when he was there. If he really rates someone, he generally will keep them around. There are a couple of exceptions. Alex Song, for example, did do a year at Charlton. But generally, if there's a young player that he thinks has got something and he's planning to use him, he keeps them at the club. He doesn't want them corrupted. Look at Serge Gnabry. You know, he sent him out because he didn't want him.
He's gone well.
Yeah, well, that shows his judgment went as well. But anyway, so, I mean, talking of players going out on loan, Eddie Nketiah has gone to Leeds. Do you think that's to do with the fact we've signed young Martinelli and we don't need four strikers? Or, I mean, Martinelli is a forward, isn't he? He's a striker.
Yeah, it does seem to be playing there.
Yeah, and there's just not room for everybody.
I mean, ultimately, Nketiah, he had a good coming into our sights with those two winners in the Carabao Cup a couple of years ago. But let's face it, he does look like a little boy. He's put on a bit of weight over the summer. We see him now, he looks a slightly more mature little boy. But I think it's in his benefit for him to spend a year on loan at Leeds, having, you know, windy nights away at Sheffield Wednesday on a Tuesday. That's what he needs rather than sitting
on Wednesday on a Tuesday. You feed yourself there.
Yeah. Try. It's tough
up,
no. But
Callum's terrible.
He's got like a 35-year-old centre-half breathing down his neck, you know, kicking the crap out of him. That's going to teach him an awful lot more than playing for the under-23s on one of those games where the ball can't go overhead high, or sitting on the bench only playing Carabao Cup, you know. I think it's in everyone's best interest.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's a mixture of things, but he does need experience, and he does need to hopefully grow in stature a little bit, and not necessarily toughen up. I'm sure he's tough, but.
But let's look ahead to our own Europa League campaign. You know, I'm assuming Martinelli will get game time. Are we going to play another striker with him? And if so, it's going to have to be one of the two established ones, isn't it?
Probably. I mean, we did it often enough last time. You know, last year Lacazette or Aubameyang played, one of them played most games, I think. I mean, I haven't got the fixtures in front of me, but from memory, I remember thinking every game going, wow, one of them, you know, Lacazette's playing, or Aubameyang, it always seemed to be one. We never took them all out.
It wasn't the same as Wenger's year in the Europa League where he played the reserves on Thursday. It was a mix and match with Emery just to keep
the momentum going, which I, you know, completely agree with. Mm. It obviously limits our options. If one of those was to pick up an injury, then, you know, what are we going to do? Run the other one into the ground, or are we just going to have to rely on Martinelli?
Yeah, or just play, well, you know, early fixtures. You've got to assume they're not going to be that difficult. Martinelli with, you know, maybe Ceballos behind him, or.
Yeah, I mean, we.
Whatever.
You can play two wide attackers. Yeah. Neither of them have to be Aubameyang or Lacazette.
If it is a worst case scenario, the way the club is now run from a football and contract point of view, I'm pretty certain there'll be a recall clause in the loan deal from Nketiah going to Leeds. So if we call him back, we forfeit some of the loan fee before we need him. What was it a few years ago when we had so many injuries and Wenger was like, oh yeah, that player on loan who we desperately need, yeah, we should have had a recall clause.
So many of these season long deals, though, they now don't allow you to have a recall clause.
Is that right? Yeah.
Some you can do, but you've got to do it in such a way that it's almost like 2 half-years rather than one full year. And you can agree the 2 half-years up front, but...
Well, does it make a difference if it's somebody in the same league?
Hard to know, but...
Same league is, but you're not allowed to play against your parents.
Well, I mean, Chambers was one last year, but that would have been in the same league, wouldn't it?
So,
yeah. Don't know.
Well, we have still got... something like, 10 days, 2 weeks until the option to sell players abroad is gone. And on that subject, through David Udo's Facebook clan, we've got a question from Nick Cowan. How much of a financial bath do you think the club is prepared to take on Mustafi? £35 million euro or pound signing, I can't remember which it was.
34 million, he was the second most expensive defender in football history at that point.
Now, I don't know how high his wages are, in all honesty. I mean, he's not on Ozil's level, let's face it. But the bottom line is he's not going to be played very often. I think we could see that, the fact that he was nowhere near the first team on Sunday, in spite of being presumably match fit. Chambers was the preferred option. Louise was on the bench. The media are saying the club have been trying to shift him.
And they're also saying he's not in Emery's plans.
Yes. So, I mean, it depends on his wages, whether or not he's happy just to sit there and take the money, doesn't it, really? Do you think they let him go for nothing?
For just an undisclosed thing?
I think letting him go for nothing would be an admission of defeat in terms of transfer policy, wouldn't it? When you signed him for so much and to let him go so soon before the end of a contract for nothing.
Has he had
a renewal since he signed?
No. Don't think so. It was a 5-year deal when he's down to the last 2 years, is that right?
It sounds about right. So he's been with us for 3 years
already.
Time flies when you're having fun.
I'm not sure he has.
No, I think it's 2, isn't it?
I think it's 2.
No, I think he's had 3 years. He had his first year on the Wenger was all right. His second year, Wenger's last year, we saw the real Mustafi, Scalacci syndrome, if you will. Then last season's last season, so that's 3 gone. Yeah. 2 to go on a 5-year deal. If he's on $80,000 a week and we let him go on a free transfer, we're £8 million up.
Mm. Okay.
Essentially.
Yeah. All right, well, not sure on that one, Nick. We will have to wait and see.
Well, I suppose what would we do? Would we take the fruit to let him go on a free transfer? I probably would.
Well, you're going to play him or you're not. I mean, presumably he will play in Europa League and Carabao Cup at some point, just to retain some element of management.
Yeah, I would have thought so, but yeah, I mean, if somebody would take him and get the wages off the...
It depends whether we need, like, you know, £10 million to balance the books a bit, then...
Well, until Bellerin gets back, you know...
It's our first choice backup.
He is the right back. Well, you could play Chambers there as well, I suppose, but, you know, he's not done well there. Mustafi is a better right back than Chambers has proved.
True.
I think I'll give you that. So maybe there is a use for him. I mean, I do feel that Emery, if he's paying players, he likes to at least get something out of them. And I think you saw that generally last season when he was picking the cup teams. So we wait to see on that one, Nick. I'm just going to slip this one in just because I don't know what to do with it. But it's from Twitter. It's from at Son of a V, or Emery's Red and White Army, as he calls themselves. Can we start a petition to get at Heavy D banned from the Emirates? I believe Heavy D is an Arsenal Fan TV regular who also partakes in some kind of reality TV show where they go around buying the contents of lock-up garages.
Yes.
However,
I know the programme, but I've not seen him on it. I'm not sure I'd recognise
him. He's something of a minor celebrity. Who obviously isn't appreciated by Son of a V. I have nothing against the individual. That's all I can say. But then again, I don't expose myself to him. So,
excuse me.
In all senses of the word.
I try and follow your path there because I don't follow him on Twitter. I don't generally watch AFTV either. So I've had limited exposure to him. Mm. But people have been, unfortunately, fueling the fire and retweeting him and getting him onto my Twitter timeline, to my annoyance.
Dear.
And he was apparently... I've seen a couple of videos of him outside the Emirates protesting against Stan Kroenke, and then, obviously, nobody invited him to be part of the We Care, Do You campaign, but he jumped on that bandwagon and claimed it was all his doing, basically, and, you know, his protests had forced Josh Kroenke to respond and Raul start buying players left, right and centre. So I'd be quite happy to exclude him from, you know, 5,000 miles of wherever I am personally.
Point
that was Phil Wall, just for clarification.
I mean, let's discuss We Care, Do You. Were you surprised that Josh Kroenke actually responded publicly to what was an open letter?
Yes. I mean, given the lack of Kroenke's in general, not just Josh, but Stan's correspondence or communication with fans up till that point, I was completely astounded, let alone doing it within 24 hours.
Mm.
Whether the contents were all particularly meaningful, whether it was just put together by a PR team, I'm sure it was, but...
Well, Josh's response.
Josh's response.
Well, it was standard stuff, isn't it? There wasn't any actual concrete we're doing this definitely. It's, oh, we love Arsenal. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know, he did Gazidis, spoke for say. 4 minutes, but didn't say anything.
Mm. Well, it's just how heartbroken he was in Baku, basically.
Seriously, I mean, I presume he took a £1,200 economy class return flight from Luton with a bunch of other gooners. I mean, ideally I'd go on a private jet. My daddy let me, but alas...
He did say towards the conclusion of the interview that we should be very excited. Now, presumably this was a reference to players that he knew we were going to try and sign. And on one level, I suppose, the signings did cause some excitement. So, you know, he delivered on that level, you know.
Well, he's not a complete mug, is he? He knows what to say to... get enough of the fans on his side, which he did, because you know some people managed to say it anyway, that oh, the Cronkies are doing all right, don't worry about them, you know, let's just see what happens on the pitch, ignoring the fact that off the pitch influences what happens on the pitch. But you know, Josh came out, I was a little bit surprised that he did respond, as Mike says, given the lack of communication from the Cronkies. And I've been to couple of AGMs where Josh has turned up and he hasn't said a word at the AGM. I'm sure you've been there as well, Kevin, and seen him sitting there relatively stony-faced.
The thing that struck me about the final ever AGM was the board were getting an absolute hammering and none of them would make eye contact with the audience except for Josh, who was like a sentry in Vietnam peeking through the barricades, just eyeing up the audience. You know, he was trying to psych people out. He wasn't, and he was the one who, I think, was the one who had to have had the vote to get him back on the board, from memory. So it was an interesting experience watching how he reacted to all that. But the one thing about that scenario is the people that, in theory, run the club were left under no illusion about the discontent and whether or not that's going to see any difference in how we go forward remains to be seen, because by that time they'd already arranged for Raoul Sanier to come in, even if he didn't start till February. But that brings me to the We Care Do You statement. And one of the things they wanted was to strengthen the board and executive team with new and dynamic appointments. So, is there now... I mean, what does the board actually do? And is there a power vacuum? Or is the combination of Vinay and Rao reporting to Josh and Cronky actually mean we don't need a board? I mean, what could we benefit from more people who know what they're doing at the club, or have we got enough?
I think if you look at the ages of the other board members, you've got Ken Fryer, who's 84 now, coming up to 85, I think. Chips and Lord Harris, both not quite as old as Ken, but getting there. And Stan is over 70 as well, I think, now, isn't he? And that's it. So since Ivan left, there's those four and Josh. And Vinay and Raoul aren't on the board.
David Miles is.
He attends the board meetings.
He's not a director.
Just company secretary.
I was going to say he's just coach sec. I saw that one go.
But he's not a board member. Never has been. So when you look at it, if it was still a public company, there would probably be rightly calls that it was long overdue that some of these board members were changed. They've sat there the same, you know, the same Harris, Fryer, Keswick. Well, nobody knows really what they do. Though to give Keswick his credit, because he comes across as almost a worse version of Peter Hill Wood in his bumbling AGM comparing attempts. But I have heard that behind the scenes in meetings of there are meetings between the London clubs and wider league meetings as well, and he goes to those and talks to his fellow chairman and has apparently been very strongly against European Super League and that kind of thing, which noticeably Josh Cronkey completely ignored, because that's a big part of the We Care Do You statement is commit to having a football club that's run as an English football club and is not a franchise for making money in a European Super League. So Josh completely ignored that, because there's no way he's going to come out and say we're not doing that, because they very well might. So so I'm kind of going around the houses here, but what I'm saying is Keswick, on the face of it, Keswick, Harris and Fryer, all old, all been sitting there too long. The whole thing needs shaking up, and it has been shaken up to a certain extent by having Raoul and Vinay there, but they don't sit on the board. So the board, as you say, has effectively been bypassed. You've got Kroenke and you've got Josh doing his bidding, and then you've got Raoul and Vinay. And the other three, to all intents and purposes, may as well not be there anymore.
Mm. I see. I think it's whether Kroenke's would ever listen to anyone else. You know, is there any point?
Well, that's the thing. If they're not be challenged.
Yeah, if they're not prepared to be challenged, then there's no point bringing anyone in, because they'd soon get pissed off. You wouldn't get anyone of any quality, because they'd know what they were walking into, or very quickly find out and walk out again.
But as I say, if it was a public company, you would have to have independent directors to challenge the ownership. If it was a public company, you'd have other shareholders still who the majority owner would have to answer to in some way. They don't have that anymore. It's just Kroenke's show, so he'll do what he wants.
I mean, we've said this in so many different ways, haven't we? But during the Wenger years, you know, if you're prepared to listen to someone, then it's good to have new blood coming in, challenge your thinking, new ideas, new thinking. Wenger didn't want that. That's why Borough and Bold and Pat Rice were sat there the whole time. The board kind of feels like the same. Now, whether we've got the new brush with Raoul and Vinay coming in, and sort of whether they will have the influence to be able to persuade the Kroenke clan that some new fresh blood on the board would be a good idea, time will tell. But you know, there's no doubt it would be, but only if they're going to listen.
Well, I imagine KSE would just set up a corporate entity in England and Wales and just appoint members of that board, which they set up onto the Arsenal board and Focus Sport, if you see what I mean, because KSE is just a Missouri company at the moment. There's no corporate presence in the UK apart from the ownership of Arsenal and the group companies, and because the board are made of the same people. As I'm thinking, I mean, please correct me, Phil, please, but I'm thinking that if, as and when Fryer, Harris and Keswick go, well, they just keep the remaining two directors on the board, or expand that, maybe getting some more of their lackeys in.
I mean all the board does is sign off anything that needs signing off. But the decision's already made, in reality. That's the feeling I get. Yeah. So they're just basically figureheads.
Unless KSE want to make more of an impression in England and Wales, I suppose.
But the board should be involved in strategy, shouldn't it?
That's what it should be doing. That's what the We Care Do You statement is saying. Basically, is the strategy now Raoul and Vinay are told, you can spend what you make the best of it, and that's pretty much it, just get on with it.
Well, that's always been the Arsenal way, so that's nothing new, is it?
Right, so what do you need a board for? To create change in culture in the club.
Yeah.
Whereby, you know, there's a push.
Who's on the Spurs board? Because ultimately, are they 100% owned by Enoch, or is that just a majority shareholding?
I believe they still trade, don't they? Spurs,
I think,
shares.
So, yeah.
Okay, ignore that. Sorry.
I mean, Joe Levy's got the vast majority of them, I believe. Yeah. But I'm trying to think, do they have AGMs?
So it's not Joe Levy, it's Daniel Levy and Joe Lewis.
Yeah. What about Liverpool with Fenway Sports Group?
They've bought it outright. Yeah, I'm pretty sure about that.
Yeah, but I'd like to see who's on their board then. Liverpool FC's board. Because that's
a good question.
If that's just Tom Werner and John, whatever his face is, I should know this, I'm a fan of the Red Sox, then that'd be interesting. It's just two people.
Yeah, well, Liverpool are the closest comparison in the big clubs to what Arsenal are now, owned by an American, or a couple of Americans.
I mean, the way Chelsea have set up their strategy means that, okay, they're not as good this season, but they've been able to partially compensate for their transfer ban because of all their activity over the recent seasons with farming out these players, because they do have the registrations of literally
the odd
half of Europe, it seems. And they were able to basically still have a competitive and we'll find out because they got hammered on Sunday. But let's look at what Arsenal are up against in terms of desire to get back into that Champions League. First question, is it a given that Manchester City and Liverpool will be ahead of the pack and unchallenged? Or do you think that last season was a bit of a one-off?
I think last season was one-off in a lot of ways, but I'd still say it's a given that Man City will be ahead of the chasing pack. Liverpool,
so they've won it already, you're saying, basically?
Yes, pretty much. I think they'd have to have a pretty poor season for anyone to catch them. You know, Liverpool last season, I mean, last season was amazing. You know, whatever team you support, for those two teams to go on the runs that they did. But that was the second season Man City had done it on the trot. Why wouldn't they do it again this year? Liverpool, I thought, just got everything went in their favour last year and they still came second. I do wonder whether they can, you know, they won the Champions League, so it wasn't all bad, but I do think that they are less likely to have the same sort of season again than Man City.
Yeah, I think it is difficult to win it 3 years in a row, as history has shown us. Not many teams have ever done it anyway, but City obviously do look strong. They looked strong thrashing West Ham 5-0. But, you know, you look at the top of the table now, City, Liverpool, United, you think, oh, well, same old, same old. And then just conveniently ignore Burnley and Brighton, who are sitting there above Arsenal as well, by virtue of winning 3-0. But I can't see that City and Liverpool are going to drop out of those top two places very easily after, you know, once three or four matches have gone by and things settle down a bit. I think they're going to be the teams to beat. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But it is difficult to win it 3 years in a row, and partly because of that, because there's going to be a sort of feeling of we've done this already, and maybe a slackening off of 1 or 2%. That's all it has to be in for City, unless Pep can keep driving them on, which maybe he can.
Well, what he does, he has composition for places.
Yeah, and maybe he's got that formula that does it. Obviously, Alex Ferguson did it. They won the league 3 years in a row twice under Ferguson. Mm. Nobody else has done that, and that was because he drove people on with a big stick. You know, probably a lot more so than Pep does. But also, to go back to your other point, Mike, freshen things up all the time with new coaches and number twos alongside him, but he just kept driving and driving and driving. And if Pep can do the same thing, then they've still got the best team, so they can win the psychological battle as well if he's prepared to do it and prepared to keep the players at it. But otherwise, Liverpool under Klopp are going to be, well, we almost did it, we know we can do it, we were so close. And I think they, you know, if City slacken off at all, I think Liverpool will be there.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I can't see Arsenal being consistent enough.
Well, I mean, the other team that people are thinking could join the party are Spurs, based on last season. And obviously, they haven't really... I mean, they did sell Kieran Trippier, but other than that, as it stands at this moment in time, they haven't sold any other major players. I mean, you know, are we going to see us in Tottenham's day this year, or is it just a bit too early?
Potentially. But I'd call it a cop-out. You'd have to ask me again at Christmas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think we need to see some more. There's a bit more time now. I mean, I have my friendly bet with a Spurs fan, which is never that friendly, really. and I said that we'll pep them. But, you know, I'm obviously going to do that.
I think if you look at the improvements to Arsenal squad on paper, then we've got a good chance of finishing above them.
I mean, it was only... we were 1 point behind them last year.
I think it was ridiculous.
One missed penalty. Derby, a few weeks into the season.
Yeah. I mean, he was getting nervous last year. He thought he was actually going to have a payout. it's close.
Okay. So, what about the other two teams of the top six? Any thoughts on either Man United or Chelsea?
Well, Chelsea are currently in the relegation zone. I think we can rule them out. I'd like to think so.
Somebody might be playing that back to you in May, yeah? I don't know. you feel Chelsea are going to have a tough...
Has anybody who's ever lost 4-0 on the first day gone on to win the league in the same season?
We're only talking about the fight for the top four, in all fairness.
Anyone who's lost 8-2 on the first game of the season gone on to finish in the top four?
That was our third.
It's not the first game.
Third, I did say four.
All I know is Chelsea, for some reason, well, allowed their players to have so much power. They lost a brilliant manager who's been appointed manager for me, the favourites for the Champions League this year, and Aaron Ramsey's new manager. He's been replaced by a former club captain, and their best player in the world has gone to Real Madrid and been replaced by loan players back on. I wish Chelsea luck.
You'd think they're going to have a tough time, but I do wonder whether, like, you know, you can just get that sort of galvanised spirit by having a lot of players that come through the ranks.
Well, what did Lampard do at Derby last year? He took a load of players on loan from Chelsea, who are now his first choice players at Chelsea, and Liverpool Castmeoffs, and he got Derby to the playoffs. Well done.
I'm not saying they're going to win the league or anything, but I think we'd be foolish to write them off.
Well, I think they're obviously a big enough club with a good enough squad that they should finish in the top six. They should.
The top
but
six
then a couple
sure
of years ago, they dropped
six.
Down from first to tenth, didn't they? And then went back and won it again the next year, which is almost unprecedented. But so, you know, potentially they could end up seventh or eighth. But they're not, unfortunately, they're not going to stay in the relegation zone. They're going to pick up enough points to be up there, and Arsenal are going to have to keep looking over their shoulder for a while.
Depends what mood the players in. I mean, Chelsea have proven that in the last, what, five, ten, as soon as Abramovich came in years. You know, if the players decide they want to turn up and play for Lampard, they'll do it. I mean, the year they went from first to tenth, I mean, that was primarily as a result of Mourinho slating the female physio and Hazard deciding to stop working. Yeah. It's high school Chelsea. Yeah.
I think Lampard is one to us, I believe.
Well, they're one of the manager.
Lampard is a risk as a manager to me, as being that inexperienced. I think that's a big risk for Chelsea, and I think, you know, they're banking on the fact he's a Chelsea hero, that the players will get behind him. But how long that will
last? I think the fans won't turn against him as quickly as they will against the players.
No, that's true.
Well, the other interesting thing in looking at the David Luiz deal, presumably there was some friction between Lampard and Luiz for Luiz to want to move.
Well, I mean, you're only going on what you read in the papers, really, aren't you? But supposedly he was annoyed he'd been left out of the last pre-season friendly, and, you know, felt the writing was on the wall that he wasn't going to be first choice. And
well, I think that's what I read, that he wasn't going to be first choice, basically, and therefore may as well go.
But then I don't think it was just that. I think it was also, I think maybe that was him going, I'm not going to be first choice, I don't want to be here. But then it was also creating a disruption in the dressing room, and it was like, bad apple, we don't want you here. We've got our work cut out as it is without you creating problems in the dressing room where we've got young players who can be influenced, maybe.
Well, I saw interviews with Lampard and Luiz's interview on the Arsenal website. They both came across, not the same as Gallas when he left Chelsea. Both came across quite level-headed in the sense that, you know, just, you know, wasn't right for either of us. Yeah. You know, shook his hand and wish him luck. Whereas, of course, Gallagher and Mourinho were cuckoo, you know. So.
The best stat I've seen about that is that Lampard, in 429 games as a Chelsea player, never lost by four goals.
Oh, wow.
And now he's done it first game.
There we are.
Record today to be broken.
All right, I'm going to finish with a Facebook contribution from our old friend Mark Ollington, used to be a regular on this podcast before he fell out of love with Arsenal.
He's now on the board at
Tunbridge Angels director, yes indeed.
What do they do?
Whether or not a league team. You can still stand to watch their games. Anyway, he says, all of our free new kits are amazing. I am so happy Puma are gone. I hate the idea of third kits, but even that is a thing of beauty. Out of the three kits, what is the panel's favourite one? And would they actually buy one? So, gentlemen, one by one. David, what's your favourite and would you buy one?
The home one. It reminds me of my first season as an Arsenal fan when I was 7 years old, 88, 89. It looks a bit like that. And whilst I wouldn't buy it, it is my birthday in the first week of October. And Tanya, if you're listening, size medium, please.
You're a medium, aren't you?
Medium.
Yes, I'm a medium. I'm sucking it in.
Okay. Mr. Wall.
I would also go for the home kit because it's almost a sort of traditional look, albeit, you know, adorned with Visit Rwanda and Fly Emirates and God knows what else. But other than that, it's a good traditional look, unlike many of the Nike ones, which had, you know, the white going across the back and various differences on the sleeves, not just red body, white sleeves. Should be easy enough, but they get it wrong so many times. So, yeah, home kit for me.
Okay.
Would I buy it? Hang on, I haven't answered that. Mm. No, I wouldn't.
Tension was building there, wasn't it? Yeah. I kind of feel like I should go something different. I can't really, because the only one I'd even contemplate buying, and I'm not going to either, is the red one, because of all the reasons really the boys just stated. I do quite like the yellow one though. It is like, obviously it's that flashback to the cult bruised banana tractor, whatever.
It's a bit more subtle though, isn't it?
It's a little bit more subtle, yeah. But it's quite nice as a result. Yeah. But no, I still wouldn't buy it.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think we're the target anymore, are we?
All right, fair enough. All right, well, on that note, we are going to wrap up because we've done our hour. And it's Gooner plug time. Yes, the first issue of the season will be out for the Burnley game and should be landing on the doormats of subscribers on the Saturday morning or maybe even Friday if the Royal Mail are kind to us. You can still subscribe through our website in the shop section of onlinegooner.com to receive all 6 issues this season. As ever, a reminder that you can contact us regarding anything to do with the podcast via Twitter @GoonerPodcast and email GoonerPodcast@gmail.com. Many thanks for the questions and topics submitted for today. With that, it is goodbye from Mike.
Goodbye.
David.
Cheerio.
And Phil.
Goodbye.
We will be back in September, although almost certainly with a guest host, as yours truly is double booked. Until then, this is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well, hey!